Hey everybody, welcome into A Tribe Called Dad. My name is DJ Hoppa, one of the co-founders here of A Tribe Called Dad. And for those that don't know, A Tribe Called Dad is a platform where we as dads share about our struggles, our stories, share tools and resources with one another. And it's just amazing. This was built out of a need. There's not a lot of people talking about fatherhood. There's a ton of fathers out there, and yet the resources are pretty slim. So we feel very fortunate to be able to find dads that are open and willing to share their experiences as dads and become a bit vulnerable, and also just be a light for other dads out there and other parents, and just kind of give some insight into what it's like to be a dad these days. And I am very excited about the season that we curated. This, if you're listening to this episode is one of several that we put together around what we are calling the season of gratitude. And gratitude as a father, and what that means to all of these men who are a part of this season. So I'm excited to be able to share that with all of you. I'm excited to be able to share this particular episode with you that I think you'll find not only insightful, but also really entertaining, because our guest in this episode is the very funny Ryan Sickler, who is a comedian, writer. He is the founder and host of a very famous podcast called The Honeydew. And shout out to our friend, our mutual friend, Lana, for connecting us. And Ryan's just awesome. And I mean, he's just such a joy to be around. And the episode and the interview itself was just really fulfilling, because I think he has this knack for being able to open up, but also to share in a really deep, but also a really light-hearted sort of way. And he shares with us what it's like to be a dad of two kids, and not only to be a dad of two kids, but to be both a single dad and a stepdad. Yeah, I'll let you kind of wrap your head around that for a moment. But he also shared with us what it was like losing his own dad as a teenager, introducing his stepson to his new little sister. Like that was, and how amazing that moment was. And also about like teaching his stepson how to drive. And ultimately, like, one of the biggest takeaways that I got from this episode was commitment. And outside of gratitude, how, you know, being a committed father by blood or otherwise, you know, and what that really means to a child and how much impact we can have as dads and as parents. So without further ado, we want to jump right into it. Here is our interview with Ryan Sickler. I am so excited to have my guy, Ryan Sickler, in on the podcast. You are a podcaster and have been doing this for 8 years, but like, to put you in that box is not fair. You're a comedian, a writer, a producer, and a dad, of course.
Yeah, I'm all those things. I mean, I always, you know, dad first these days, of course, but comedian first always. Before podcaster, before writer, before, there's none of it without being a comedian. But thank you for having me, by the way.
Yeah. Oh, man. Hey, it's a pleasure. And I'm so glad to have you on this. And I don't know how much of your fatherhood story you get a chance to really let out sometimes. But, you know, I feel like people, this is such a big part of our lives. And to be able to share this with this audience is awesome.
Well, my second album, which came out in, 2018, it's a lot of it is about me being a father, me being a stepdad, and then my relationship and what it was like with my father and what he was like as a dad, you know. And I talk about, and my father died when I was young. My dad died when I was 16. Mm. So he's just someone I was my hero, and I miss him still all the time. You know, it was hard. It was this bittersweet moment of being a father where I was so happy to have my daughter. And then also, like, man, the one guy I would want to ask all these questions to isn't even here, you know? And that was tough at first.
What were some of the questions that you had that you feel like you...
Well, I'm a twin, and I want to know how in the hell... Are we allowed to cuss on this?
Yeah,
I wanted to know how in the fuck a guy in his mid-20s in the 70s, you know, did it with two little babies. I was struggling with this one, you know? So also it was an opportunity to find out what I was like as a baby. Because my mother left earlier. My mom split the family, and once he was gone, that was it. So... she and I have since reconnected just a few years ago, but, you know, I didn't know, like, did I sleep? Was I a good baby? You know, and then I'm finding out that they had to rush me to the hospital for this and that. And I'm like, I don't know any of these things. Mm-hmm. Did I have earaches? Any of that shit? Like and what's it like to be a real fucking dad? Like, how in the hell did you work full-time double shifts and come to every practice, every game? How did you switch with people to do, you know, and now that I'm old enough to, I'm like, how in the fuck did he do that?
Right.
If I'm half the father my dad was, I'm doing a great job.
That's incredible, man. Yeah. And that's a little bit rare to hear, especially during those times where, you know, like you'd have a dad that was that active and that would be, you know, a part of these kids' lives like that. That's incredible.
Yeah,
man.
He was there. And he was a single dad for a while there, raising three kids. But like I talk about on my podcast, like, you know, the honeydew, I'm like, we didn't have that. I'll be there for you for everything. It was like, look, man, life's going to be hard. This is the way shit is. I got to go to work. You guys got to take care of yourselves. You have to be good kids. You have to be good students. You have to hustle. You have to work hard, you know.
Right.
I like to say that I still have a blue-collar work ethic, but I just want to be in that white-collar tax bracket. You know what I'm saying?
That's absolutely right. Yeah. That when you look back at your childhood then, as you are, and you're sort of drawing from, you know, what that was like, it sounds like there were a lot of things though that have been answered about like how he was able to do that and things that have permeated into your fatherhood. Like, what do you feel like is probably the biggest thing that you've taken from your upbringing that you then institute in being a dad today?
I think it's a great question. I would say because time is so fleeting and you don't know if you're going to get 50 years or only five more minutes with someone, I try to be as absolutely present as I can in anything they're doing, as interested as I can be in anything they're doing. And to like, that's what it really is, just about unconditional love. It's being there and being present. It's not about these fucking trips to Europe and my dad backpacking here and there. Like, all those things are great. I'm not shitting on them. What I'm saying is, like, I didn't have any of that. And I always say, if we would have had a palatial mansion, it wouldn't have made that death feel any better. It wouldn't have made it feel any easier, you know, because we had a pull out back. None of that would have mattered.
Right.
It was be there and be present and love unconditionally. That's it.
Yeah.
That's it. That's all I try to do as hard as I can now.
I feel like that's such an important message for people to be getting, especially these days. I mean, we live in such a society that, you know, people feel like they can, like that those other things, material possessions and whatnot, actually matter more. And
no one gives a fuck if you had a nice couch after you died.
Right.
No one gives a shit.
Right.
No one cares.
I remember reading a quote, I think it was directed at moms, where it was like, you know, when your kids leave and they're now like 19 and out of the house, nobody's going to care that the toys were on the floor.
Nope.
Right?
No one.
Right. Like, but straining that relationship, like, that'll have lasting effects. And not saying that you should live in a house that's got like crap all over.
But you're right. But those arguments, that anxiety, that discomfort, that shit does last forever. Mm-hmm. It lasts forever.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've got an interesting situation in your fatherhood, too. You've got a daughter who I believe is 6,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, she just turned 6.
Yeah, and then you've got a stepson who is 17,
yeah. So I was engaged to my daughter's mom when we had my daughter, and then only a year after we split. But I had already been in a relationship. So the long story shorter version is we dated for 2.5 years where I got very close to her son. We split for two, and she didn't want any of us to have any contact. And I honored that.
Right.
And then we ended up getting back together for another, like, round two and a half years.
Right.
And we bonded even more then. And, you know, now he's family. He's my daughter's brother.
Right.
You know? And, you know, technically stepdad, you know, I never married his mom. But one day I was in his life all the time. And I have a great relationship with his father mm-hmm. and his dad's parents, mm-hmm. His grandparents. And I would go out to pick him up in Palmdale where his grandparents were, meet him halfway, drop offs, all these things. And just really took to the kid. And, you know, we actually have a series we're doing right now called Learner's Permit, where when he was getting his learners, he was wanting to drive the car. I go, well, if you're driving the car, I'm getting fucking content. So you can drive around, but I'm throwing GoPros all in his damn car.
Yeah.
So we got a series getting ready to come out. We're still very close. He is such a good brother. Especially with an 11-year gap. He, you know, I remember me being 17. I wouldn't have been bothered to do any of that shit, you know?
Yeah.
But I used to go pick him up at elementary school all the time. And one day I walked in and all these kids were like, who is this? Who's this guy that comes in and gets you every day? And he's like, I don't know what to call you. Like, can I call you my stepdad? I go, well, you can, but let's make sure it's okay with everyone else first. Because that's a specific thing. And then everyone was fine with it, including his father, who honestly was the most important to me when it came to that decision, not his mom.
Right.
And he's just called me that ever since. And I've been that ever since. Like, I'm in his life.
That's
know?
Amazing,
so he comes
man.
Over, spends a night with us. He still hits me up for money, you know, that kind of shit. You know, he still, he owes me right now. I want it on record. He still owes me $100.
The whole thing with the title of stepdad, and actually I'm really glad that you brought that up about, you know, the relationship between you as his stepdad and his dad. Tell me, how did that conversation go down, and what were there concerns on your side when that originally came up?
Yeah, I you know, first of all, I wouldn't want to disrespect any man or I know the way I felt about my kid. I remember people come, well, my dad can be like, I was like, I had one dad. Your dad ain't gonna be my dad. You know, so I was very sensitive to that. Right. And I called his dad and I go, look, you know, your son calls me a stepson. I don't know how you feel about that. And he was beyond mature about it. He said, look, man, you know, my son comes home and says great things about you. He could come home scared of you. He could come home talking shit about you, telling me horrible things about you, but he doesn't. He tells me so many good things. And at that time, honestly, the truth is his dad had his own thing going on and wasn't there in his life all the time. He might only see him once a month or whatever, but I was. And I went to every practice. I went to all the games. I helped tutor with school. I'd be there for bedtime. I'd watch him if his mom went out with the girls or if she had to work, you know. And we were really got to be a family. So, and when we split up the first time, it was the hardest breakup I had ever gone through because I'd never lost two people in a breakup before. You know, I just that person.
Right.
I'd never lost two, and I was like, man, and that one did fuck with me for a while. And then when we got back together, it was a few months before I wanted to see him because I wasn't sure how this was going to go.
Right, and you couldn't go through that again.
I did not want to, either of us.
Yeah, and for him, right, yeah.
Exactly. And so it was a few months, and I came over, and he was in the shower, and I hadn't seen him for, you know, over 2 years. So we used to play Uno all the time. So I sat down at the table and I just started shuffling the cards. And when he came around the corner, I go, "We're gonna finish this Uno game or what?" And he froze like a statue. And he's like, "Ryan," and he came running over and he was crying. And I was good. I was good. I'm emotional, but I was good. And then he said to me,
"Here it is."
He said, "I used to play out front by myself all the time, and I would look in every passing car to see if it was you." And then I was like, dude, I was a rock until
You got me on the edge right now, man. You got me on the edge.
I lost it all, dude. I like to think I'm a strong dude, but I was just like, oh, my God. Yeah, so, and I've had him on my old podcast before, The Crab Feast, and like I say, now I'm doing this series of them, so... I take him everywhere. We took him to the Ravens game last year. Got to be friends with Orlando Brown, and he gave us tickets. So we'll go. I just take him everywhere. I love hanging out with him. He's fun. He's 17, and he can be a dick if he wants to be a dick. But so was I at 17. He's a better 17-year-old than I was.
Right.
I can honestly say that.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and
I was a good kid, but I was a bigger dick.
Well, I think, the beauty of it is that, you know, you – were there because you wanted to be there as well. And I think that there's a big difference when it comes to that. And not saying that, you know, if these are, you know, if you are related by blood, that then, oh, you quote unquote have to be there, because people don't
My mother wasn't.
Yeah, right. They don't hold that up to that standard either. But it is different when this is a decision that you've made. How different has it been, obviously, with your stepson and then your daughter? What's it been like being a girl dad over the last 6 years?
Man, I love it. I wanted a girl. I genuinely did, because I have two brothers, and I like almost every one of my cousins is a boy that was my age, except for like one or two. And, you know, I was a really angry teenager, especially with dad dying and my mom not there. And you don't realize it till you look back, but I was angry. A lot of fights, a lot of, you know, bullshit, never arrested, knock on wood. I've been cuffed, but I talked my way out of it.
There's still time.
There's plenty of time. There's plenty of time. But I knew it would calm me down. Right. I really knew it would calm me down. I knew it would make me see the world from a different point of view, and I wanted that. I was really excited about that. So when I found out we were having a girl, I was stoked. I was like, all right, good, you know. And you know, it's she's funny as shit. She's smart. She's on point. She gets along with her brother. She gets comedy. And I can tell, you know, she takes from both of us for sure, but I can totally tell. And her mom would be like, whatever, but definitely got my comedic personality. Right. There's no doubt. She's on point.
And isn't it a trip when you can see that in your kid and be like, dang, that's totally me.
Yes.
And it wasn't even something from – it's weird when it's something that is from nature, not necessarily from nurture, not from like being around you saying it.
Right.
It's like, hey, how did you even come up with that? It's crazy.
So I really enjoy like – just last night, I was dancing with her. We had a dance party, and like, you know, she's like, you have to do my moves, Dad. And I'm doing them. I'm all over the place, but I'm jumping on the couch, spinning around. I put outfits on, costumes. Yep. I love it. I mean, I still feel like a kid, you know. I know I'm 47, but my knees will argue with me, but I still feel like I'm like 22. You know what I'm saying? My knees and my back are like, we ain't fucking 22, bro. You could tell way you carry your daughter who's too goddamn heavy now.
You know? But that's what a six-year-old will do, you know, and especially a girl, because you do anything for them.
Anything.
You know? Yeah. Amazing. Amazing. What do you feel like is something that you feel like has changed in you? You anticipated some bit of a change, but what do you feel like has really changed in having this daughter?
Well, a couple things I've noticed mostly. Number one, again, back to me just calming down, being a much more... I don't raise my voice much around. I think I've yelled one time and it scared her and she cried.
Right.
And I go, well, hey, how many times have I yelled at you in your entire life? And she's like, once. I go, I'm allowed one. I'm allowed one every 6 years. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like,
that's pretty good, man.
That's pretty solid.
Yeah, that's.
But just last night, I said to her, I go, hey, I'm starting to get frustrated. I've asked you to do this four times now and you're just doing what you want to do and I'm getting frustrated and I don't like that. And that upset her enough. Yeah. She's like, I want you to stay here, but I don't want you to talk to me or touch me. Because we were trying to go to bed. I'm like, you want me to rub your back? She's like, no. And then so I didn't say anything and I let her come to me. She's like, she was crying. Like, I didn't like it when you said I got frustrated. I said, hey, I'm allowed to be frustrated. I said, I didn't get mad. You didn't get in any trouble. Mm-hmm. I didn't raise my voice, but I told you how I felt. And the way you're feeling right now, imagine me feeling that way when you weren't listening. You know? So I talked to her like an adult. But it certainly has calmed me down. And it also, on the other side, gave me way more anxiety. Way more anxiety. Like, I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to sleep knowing that they're going out into the real world and whether they're going to come home every night.
Right.
You know, my daughter, right at Christmas last year, almost got hit by a car. And I came unhinged. Like, I didn't know I had all this anxiety, just sitting there chilling, waiting for a moment where it could go, here we go, motherfucker, party time. So I started going to therapy. I went to EMDR therapy. And what I realized was that, and I said this to her, I said, I can't stop thinking about what didn't happen. And she goes, you're future tripping. That's the term she used. And she's like,
That's the term who used? Your six-year-old
my
daughter?
My therapist.
Oh, I was about to say.
Could you imagine?
I was about to say, what?
Could you imagine?
Like, wow, you said she was advanced in the... Wow, yeah.
But instead of focusing on here and now and what didn't happen, I was
Yep.
Seeing her get hit by this car and, you know, just imagining what my life and it just all of a sudden I got scared to fly.
Mm.
All of a sudden I got scared of heights. And I had never been any of those things.
Mm.
And through therapy and everything, I just realized that it's not a real moment. My reactions are, you know, they're unfortunately, they're sort of ingrained in me at this point from all the trauma I had suffered with these deaths and these things that I'm feeling something I had felt before, but not about this, about that. And that shit's done and over with. So I had to really work on myself to get to a point where I would calm down. I'm still a little on the flights, but other than that, I'm pretty solid now. You know, and during it all of it, I was doing stand-up. So I'm flying, you know, a couple times a month, and I'm coming to her and going, I got another one, and I'm not gonna not work. And
right.
You know, here I got, and I started getting better and better on my flights.
Mm.
Yeah.
Wow, that's crazy. Like how that one thing kind of triggered
it,
that.
It did.
Wow.
Big time.
But it's good though, because now you've got that out in the open, and now you're able to.
And
to
I'm work a big believer in therapy, and you know, this was a different kind. I actually went to Dr. Drew because I had that connection. Like, well, why don't I ask the fucking expert of experts here?
Right.
And he sent me to this specific lady, and I just thought, you know, if Dr. Drew gives you a recommendation, you don't take it, you're just an asshole. You know, you don't want help. You don't really want to be fixed.
Right.
So yeah, I was lucky to have that resource.
Wow, man. Wow. It's really wild how like all of these things come together. And I literally was just reading something earlier today about fear and being able, like, that the fears that we produce in our mind obviously usually are way grander than what it is in real life. And yeah, it's hard to be able to like control that and take hold of that. And I think it, especially as a parent, you start thinking of all the what ifs. Like, I can't imagine when my daughters, because my oldest is 7.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine when my daughters are teenagers. There's the same sort of thoughts that
in the world we're in today with the texting and the, you know, even with my stepson Derek out there driving, like, I know it makes me sound like an old fart, but I think you should be 18 to drive.
Mm.
We didn't have texting when we started driving, you know, there's, and these cars now, they look like fucking jet cockpits, you know, I didn't even have air conditioning in my car when I was in high school, you know, we had a radio and some control, heat controls.
Right.
That was it.
Yeah.
Now there's so much to distract you in a car, including this thing.
Yep.
That I think it's just so much dangerous out there these days. I'm more worried about texting and driving than the drinking and driving.
Yeah, it's
not that my kid's going to do it. I mean, coming at them.
Yeah, well, because that's the other thing.
The people on the roads.
Right.
Yeah.
You can't control that.
Plus the pills. Today, so many people are on Percocets and Oxys and Vicodins and are out there driving around, falling asleep on, you know, prescribed heroin and shit.
Right.
So it's a different world out there on the road these days.
Yeah, you got to be alert. It's interesting. I'm wondering why anybody hasn't invented yet the phone to be locked
when the car starts.
I mean, it seems like you can blow into a breathalyzer to be able to turn the ignition on. I feel like there needs to be something like that.
Yeah, there should be.
Should invent this, Ryan.
I'm on it.
As if you don't have anything else to do.
I'm not busy enough.
Man, I can't thank you enough for sitting down and opening up and sharing some of this. I do have another question before we move on to, you're going to put together a top three for us, which I'm very excited about. But I can't leave this interview section without asking you about how comedy plays into fatherhood in your mind and how being on the stage, like what's the correlation between being a comedian and some of the skills that you've really honed on that side? How does that play into fatherhood in any way?
That's another great question. And I would say the most important thing or impactful thing I've seen with comedy in my personal relationship, especially as a parent, is humor diffusing almost everything.
Mm.
Just last night, she was upset. She was crying.
Right.
And I go, well, sounds like you need to blow your nose. You need to blow your nose. She's like, yeah. And she sits up and she blows it. And then she throws the Kleenex off the side of the bed. But I let it hit me.
Mm.
And I start freaking out like this gross. And boom, right away.
Right.
Starts dying laughing, blows her nose, throws another one.
Yeah.
And then asleep in 5 fucking minutes. So it's been a real skill and a real gift to be able to diffuse any serious situation almost with laughter and humor. Yeah.
Yeah. I feel like it's such a great tool to be able to have. Yes. And especially as a dad, especially when, you know, kids are that young. I mean, you know, it's funny because even if you're not a funny guy necessarily, like, you can be hilarious to your 4-year-old.
Oh, yeah.
To your, I mean, you're the.
You're the shit. You're everything.
You're everything.
It blows my mind when they ask, you know, they ask you a question because they think you know everything. And when you say, I don't know, and they look at you, you're like, yeah, I don't fucking know everything. Right. But I'm also a single dad. I mean, I split custody with her mom. So, you know, being a single dad also, like, I make sure I went to every doctor appointment. I still go to almost everything I can. I just took her to the dentist. I've taken her to every haircut. Her mom's never even taken her to a haircut. I do every haircut. Mm. I take her to the high-end salons and shit, and all the girls love her. my friend Tara, who cuts my hair, loves her and lets her be her little assistant and shit, you know. So she's like, are you going to the salon today? Like, we're going to the salon today.
And yeah, I mean, I got to imagine there's some challenges.
Mani pedis. Took her to get a mani pedi. You'll laugh at this. It's so ridiculously funny. But I take her to get a mani pedi. This is when she's like 3. I'm like, let's go do a daddy daughter day. We're going to go get mani pedis. I get her fingers and toes, and I just get my toes done, right? And we're at this nail place, and this lady kneels down at my feet and starts doing my feet. And this guy, this man, does hers. And he says in his accent, he's like, what color you like? And she looked at me, and I was like, oh, fuck. She's never heard an accent. And started laughing so hard. She goes, that's a funny accent. I was like, Stella, this lady down here knew it. She is pissing herself that my daughter can't stop laughing every time he talks. And I forgot that she'd never heard anyone talk in, you know, speak English in a broken accent like that.
Right,
oh,
right.
My God, dude. I was embarrassed and laughing at the same fucking time. I was like, oh, I got to teach you some shit, girl.
I got to imagine that, like, that's one thing, too, that must be really special. And it's something that, like, I started to do recently, actually, with my girls, because I've got 2 girls and, you know, I'm around, but my wife's always around, too. And so, you know, the amount of times where we have just dad and daughter, just one of them, is very rare. And so I started taking my girls out individually on dates, just each one.
Yeah.
But I got to imagine on your side, I mean, there's got to be these amazing dad-daughter date moments that, like...
And I don't sit around, you know what I mean? Like, even when she was little, I wasn't the scared dad that was gonna... she's gonna get sick. She's gonna get this, that. I threw her in the car and we went places. We did shit. We've always have. You know, I'm also the guy that's just like, let's just throw a bag in the car this weekend and go somewhere and just go. We live in California. There's so much shit to do here.
Right.
So I'm... all about. I mean, when she was potty training, we flew to Maryland to go visit my family so she could see all her cousins, aunts, uncles, that shit. And I didn't break. I made her fucking pee and poop on the plane. Like, I didn't just put the diaper on and get to eat and then have to redo it all. Like, went to the goddamn Delaware State Fair and she had to use the bathroom, went in the disgust. I was like, no.
Wait, in the porta potty?
We're doing it. Not a porta potty, but it might as well have been.
Right.
I'm like, we're doing it. We're not breaking. And I got her off that. I got her off her pacifier. I did that. That was the first weekend that I was like, fuck, we're doing it. Mm. You just don't need it. It's going to push your teeth out like the Simpsons, I kept telling her. And then she just, the first night, didn't do it. Her mom was like, didn't even cry for it.
Mm.
Couldn't believe it. So it's been these like challenges of doing this because her mom already went through this once with her son.
You know?
So she's... you know, been there, done that.
Yeah, right.
Not me. You know, when I heard the croup cough, I was like, whoa, what is it? You know, I've been to the ER a few times with her, you know, massive throw ups and the stomach virus where you're just walking and it's projectile vomiting while they're walking and shit. I'm like, what the fuck's happening?
Right.
But I'm so into all of it. I'm there for all of it. I don't care what it is, you know.
That's amazing, man. That's amazing. I thank you so much for sitting down for us to get a chance to talk about all of this, and I'm very excited. Don't go anywhere. Ryan and I are going to come back, and Ryan, you're going to put together a top 3 for us. It'll be a little bit of a surprise in terms of what it will be, but don't go anywhere. More with Ryan Sickler and A Tribe Called Dad.
A Tribe Called Dad. This is the top 3.
It's the top 3.
It's the top three.
This is the top three.
Welcome back to A Tribe Called Dad. I've got Ryan Sickler here. We've got a top three. You actually opened up about a lot of things during our time talking just earlier. But one of them was being a stepdad and how I can tell how important that is to you and what that means in terms of your relationship with your stepson as well. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to do top three stepdad moments.
Okay.
And yeah, man, I'm excited to hear this. So here we go. Number one.
Number one in order of importance, number one would certainly be introducing this kid to his new sister. And us legit being family now. Mm. That was pretty fucking awesome. I have a great picture of him just holding her. Because, God, he was only 11.
Right.
You know, and he's already 17. And what a difference between 11 and 17,
oh,
as you know.
What a difference, yeah.
So that was a really, really awesome, powerful, impactful moment. And then also, like, continuing that same thing, like, he's now living with his dad out in Upland, and he comes to visit all the time, but just driving out there and making sure that they stay connected and they stay, you know, because the age gap is enough to keep them apart.
Right.
I don't want distance to be an excuse.
Right.
And I just, you know, I hear these parents like, oh, my kids live in Irvine. I'm like, that's an hour away. You don't go fucking see your kids. Like, right. What kind of piece of shit are you? So I make sure that they're together. And I would say definitely having, introducing him to his sister was pretty awesome.
What was his initial reaction?
Crying, like he loved her. Right? He's a good big brother. He's a sweet, sweet kid. He is. Mm. Yeah, I have to say that.
Amazing, man. Amazing. All right.
Owes me $100. I ain't going to forget it.
Here we go. Number two.
Number two,
top three stepdad moment.
I would say number two. This is a fun one. I taught him how to switch hit. So okay. he was playing Little League when I first met him. And his mom would go out and do her thing. And this kid would wear nothing but tighty whities all around the damn house. So I would put him in his room, and I would teach him how to hit regular right-handed, and I would say, give me three from the right side, three from the left side. I showed him how to stand, I showed him how to switch his hands, and I taught him how to swing, because at that age you can do it. Anyone can do it,
right?
It's just like learning a new language. That's the age. Do that shit then. Don't try to do that when you're 47 and you don't even know what the fuck mucho means, you know. So I start seeing him hit better from the left side. Mm. And I'm like, holy shit. And he started to see it. He starts rifling. And we're playing with a wiffle ball in the house, but he's breaking lights and shit. I'll buy him. I don't care. He's doing so good. So his mom's like, what the hell is going on? So we go to a Little League game. And back then, the coaches pitched, and every kid got to hit three times.
Okay.
And, you know, you watching these Little League games, they're brutal. And the kid hitting it out of the infield, they're so little. You know, there's nobody in the outfields getting any play. They're just out there picking noses and wedgies and shit.
Right.
And he was doing so good. So before that, actually, I took him to a batting cage. I'll never forget. We went to Burbank, and I go, get in the cage, do five from the right, five from the left. And he's nailing them. Mm. And I don't want to get overly excited. Like, geez.
Sure.
But these other dads are coming up to me like, how the hell did you get him to do that? I go, well, I work with him. They go, what do you mean? I go, every night. We're in his room, you know. They just think it just happens.
Right,
you know?
Like,
I'm
natural,
like, you have to spend time with with your kid.
Yeah.
So he walks up and he bats, and I go, hey, if you want to hit from the left side today, you can do it. No pressure. You do not have to do it, but if you want to try it out, try it out. This is the place to try it. We're in Little League.
Right.
And he goes up and hits right side. He goes up and hits right side. And then the last time he gets up, and I'll never forget, he walked up and he looked at me. And I go, I'm hitting his mom. I'm like,
it's about to happen. It's about to happen.
And he did. He walked to the left side. And I go, holy shit. And he hit a double.
Wow.
And after that, the coach's son couldn't do it. Hit switch, so he said no kids could do it. I was like, that's bullshit.
Wow.
This kid can fucking hit from the left side. So he stopped doing it. But he could do it. He did it in a few games. And he was out there on second base jumping up and down. His mom's looking at me. I was like, I told you he could hit from the left side.
That's awesome.
I told him too. I tell him all kinds of shit. I'm like, I'll tell you another one too, because this is part two also, but of part two.
Part two.
I'm like, if you can hit from the left side of the plate, you could DH until you're 42, 43 years old and make millions of dollars.
Right.
So then he wanted to play football. And his mom's like, I don't want him playing concussions. I go, you want to know what you could do? You could kick field goals. You want a free ride to school? kick some field goals. You can get into a small university. You're not going to get the concussions. You're going to get your school paid for. So I started taking him to Santa Monica College. I bought him the NFL field goal holder and a ball. We went just a couple months ago, and we were kicking 35, 40-yard field goals together. Wow. He can hit them. I mean, look, we're not Justin Tucker and putting them up through the uprights with 10 more, 20 more yards to go, but we're getting them through, and we get out there and practice. And he was hammering them for a while, and he would go out and do it by himself and shit. And I was like, good job, dude.
Wow.
So I've had an impact. Yeah. It's just nice to have had this impact on this kid that's been positive, you know?
Yeah.
Number three. There's so many. But I'll pick this one. I taught him how to swim.
Okay.
And that was a big deal.
Yeah. How old was he when you taught him how to swim?
He's probably like 6, 7.
Okay.
And he hadn't swam yet. We put him in this one of those bullshit
classes.
No, a suit.
Oh.
A floaty suit. But the thing makes you go face down in the water. I'm like, oh my God, this is not good. So no, he didn't go to. And my daughter, we did. We put her in, but we didn't need to. Like, we put her in just to get her used to the water, but early. And the reason was because I lived in an apartment building where they have a pool,
right,
but they don't have a fence around it.
Right,
they told me they're not going to put a fence around it. And I said, well, then instead of being scared dad, I'm just going to teach you how to swim. You need to know how to swim. It's a life-saving skill. It's not riding a bike. Riding a bike is done for fun. Swim, you can fucking survive.
Right.
You know?
Right.
So I was teaching him at another apartment building I was living at the time, and we would do it for a while and swim, swim, swim. He was getting better and better and better, and I took him to a friend's place down in Temecula. His mom and I went for the weekend. Same thing, trying to teach him how to swim. And it's like 7 o'clock. It's the middle of the summer. And we're all sitting around here talking, and I just hear this splash. And I think, oh, shit, this kid fell in the pool. And we look, and he's just going. And he swam.
Wow.
He didn't say a word to anybody. Jumped in the shallow end, swam all the way down to the deep end and all the way back. And I was like, dude, I'm going to get you a – because we called it a mankini. We didn't even have a bathing suit. It was a pair of shorts that were my buddies that were so big we tied the drawstring around the back of his neck so he just would stay up. Called it the mankini.
Oh, man.
And I was like, come on, we're going to Walmart right now. Drove down the hill, bought him a Spider-Man bathing suit so it fit the rest of the weekend, and ever since he's been swimming.
Wow.
So that was pretty cool too, yeah.
Wow, that's incredible,
yeah,
man.
Yeah, I taught him a life-saving skill.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And also a bunch of other things, which is great.
So many. I mean, I love to be out there driving with him. I love when he comes over and hangs out with us. You know, and he and I have the same kind of sense of humor. And another great moment too, I had him on my old podcast, The Crab Feast, and we sat down and talked about like what it was like to be a guy. That was maybe 3. So he's probably about a freshman in high school then, maybe around there. And we just talked about like what it's like to be a freshman these days. And we talked about homecoming now versus what it was like when we did it.
Right.
And they're doing it it's like a full, like the mini forum and shit there. It's like all these schools go together, not once. Yeah, like a lot. Yeah, it was crazy. So we talked about that. And then just like moments we'd had where we really die laughing about dumb shit. And that was a real, it's the internet. So I thought I would get, you know, this kid sucks and all that. But one person had a negative comment. And then another one's most negative thing they said was, I thought this was going to suck, but this was such a good episode. And I was like, all right, we turned you around. We got you.
That's good. That's a good one. That's a good one. Man, before we sign off here, I got to ask you, I'm going to ask you about a word. And I just want you to tell me the first thing that comes to mind for you. Gratitude.
First thing that comes to mind, right away, my father came to mind. Mm-hmm. I just have to say, and I'm sure it's because I'm so, you know, grateful and I, you know, I got 16 years with the man, and it made an everlasting impact on me in such a profound way. Mm-hmm. Again, to be this age, now I'm older than my father ever was, which blows me away. I don't know if this makes sense, but I don't care if I live to be 100. I will never feel older than my father. Does that make sense to me?
Yeah.
You know, I know he died at 42, but I'll never feel old. I still feel like his kid.
Mm-hmm.
Which is interesting now that I think about it, because you know, there's stuff I've done that he hasn't done. So I would, you know, what advice I would have to give a 42-year-old him is pretty interesting. But,
right.
You know, not only him, but my grandmother too, his mom. Like, family was everything. And I still talk to, you know, my third cousins and shit. I just call my third cousin's wife on the way here. Like, we're all very close. We're super extended. Live with my grandmother after my dad died, then live with her sister after she died. And I still reflect on that. Like, God, man, my grandmother's sister took me in. Like, how lucky and fortunate I am, even though it's that far down the line, that somebody gave a shit and took me in. Yeah. So I would say family. I would sum it up with family if I could go back. My dad was the genesis of that, but really his mom and her sisters and everyone just taught us, you know, how to do, just taught us how to live by example. Mm. You know, yeah, everything's fucked up and people are fucked up, but these people are good people. They're your family. You love them, you take care of them. And the ones that don't want to be here, let them go.
Right.
That's it.
Right. Man, this has been awesome.
Thank you so much, man.
I appreciate it. And everybody, make sure to follow all the things that are going on with Ryan. You got so much stuff that's happening.
Yeah, just
man.
Follow me. RyanSickler.com is my website, and Ryan Sickler on all social media. I got the Honeydew podcast going on, got the Patreon podcast going on, got the Learner's Permit series coming out soon. Doing one or two other new shows right now, stand ups. Not out there, so I gotta keep giving content. I'm gonna keep doing it.
Absolutely. Well, thank you so much to Ryan, and thank you to you out there for listening in. We'll see you next time.
Dads are better than moms. Dads better than moms.
Dads are better than mommies. Sorry.
I am so grateful for each and every one of you for listening to this episode of A Tribe Called Dad. Just as a reminder, this episode is one of several that are part of a 6-episode series totaling 5 different interviews with a diverse group of dads. I want to encourage you to listen to the other episodes within this season. They're all super great, and I'm very proud of what we were able to put together within this season. I want to thank our entire team who works super hard on the podcast. Big shout out to Marcy. Shout out to 3D, Spider, myself. I'm going to shout myself out. Why not? I work hard on this on this podcast as well. I do also want to send everybody to atribecalleddad.com. If you are not listening to this on the website, you can. And you can also find out a ton of other information about some of our past episodes, some of the other dads who are part of the tribe. Shout out to everybody in the tribe. We've also got merch available on the site. So maybe for that dad that's in your life, you want to get them a mug, you want to get them a shirt, a hat. We got all of that up on tribecalleddad.com. And in fact, we actually have some merch specifically for the season of gratitude that I think is really dope that you should check out and buy it all up. It all helps. It helps the cause. It helps spread the awareness. And in fact, actually, speaking of that, if you have a dad in your life, or you are a dad and you would like to nominate a dad, maybe even yourself, you can do that on atribecalleddad.com as well. And we are in the process of actually curating another season, and there will be much more to come. We are switching fully to this season format from here on out. And so we're very excited about just all the future episodes and all the dads that we can bring together. Last but not least, please subscribe to the podcast, rate and comment. It definitely helps our reviews and rankings within the podcast store, and helps spread just fatherhood in general. We need more resources for dads out there, and we're just thankful and grateful that you've been a part of this and that you've listened to this episode. Also, if you want, share the podcast, share it with a fellow dad, with somebody who needs to hear this or who you'd want to hear this, hear the episode. We're just grateful for all of you for tuning in, and a share goes a long way. In fact, actually, a share means way more to us than any sort of financial contribution. So thank you again for tuning in. I do want to end this all with this idea and this thought. In this season of gratitude, and in this season that we are all living through right now, it is sometimes really difficult to be able to celebrate some of the wins and some of the small things in life, and to really, you know, look at what has gone on in our lives and to really just celebrate how wonderful this is that we are all still here, that we are all still connected, that we are all still waking up in the morning, breathing, and that goes a long way. So I just want to leave you with that and leave you with this idea that the attitude of gratitude, this is a decision. This is something that you are in control of. You are in control of your focus. You are in control of your attitude. And that's pretty much the only thing that you have control of. You know that if you're a parent. Thanks for tuning in. I'll see you next time.